Welcome to today's edition of the Bible Class. Our teacher, Dr. Kenneth C. Hill, is teaching from the Old Testament book of Esther. You may send your questions by email through our website at whcbradio.org. That's whcbradio.org. Or you may mail those questions to the Bible Class, care of WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Blountville, Tennessee, 37617. And now, here is Dr. Hill with today's lesson.
Welcome to the Bible Class. We're continuing with our study in the book of Esther. What a unique and wonderful book it is. In this book, Esther portrays our advocate, Jesus Christ. It's interesting, if you've studied history, perhaps there are some cobwebs in your history mind. But Xerxes was a well-known king and general as king of Persia, as Ahasuerus in the book of Esther. He was famous for his expeditions against Greece, and he was famous for his defeat, having been defeated, at Salamis in 480 BC. Those historians that I've read in years past tell us that it was one of the world's most important battles. There was a historian named Herodotus that described this feast that we have here of 180 days of feasting there in verse 4 that we read about last time. And it was the same thing as was described here very succinctly in Esther chapter 1. Now, this was the occasion of planning the battle, planning the campaign against Greece. This was in the third year of his reign. Remember that? Verse 3 tells us that. Now, as we said, the book of Esther covers 10 years, but in the third year of his reign, he had this feast, and Esther replaced Vashti in the seventh year of his reign. Not that Vashti wasn't thrown out before that. It took a while for the king and his advisors to choose another wife. So, according to Esther chapter 2, verse 16, then Esther came in the seventh year of his reign. Ahasuerus was seeking comfort at that time because of his disastrous defeat. So, in this time of world history, and this was considered to be epic, this defeat was of epic proportions. So in the midst of this time is the story of Esther. Now, the story of Esther has intrigue. It has all sorts of politics involved. It has death. It is charming and beautiful as a story as we look at God's provision and his watch care over his people. Every page is full of God, even though he's never mentioned. God is in every word, practically, of the book of Esther because he is in control. Now, it's interesting that one commentator has pointed out that the reason that God's name was probably not included in the book was that it went through the Persian hierarchy, the Persian censor, because it was considered a book of history for the Persians. And if they had found the name of God there, they would have removed it, and maybe they did. But even if they did, they could not remove the character and the influence, the impact, and the power of Almighty God. Matthew Henry said it this way: if the name of God is not in the book of Esther, his finger is. Another commentator called it the romance of providence. God has a part in all events of our lives. God is never absent. Not only do we have the promise of Jesus Christ for the believer, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, we have the promise of God throughout the Old Testament of how he takes care of his own. Now, in our nation, in many nations of the world, there have been movements to try to rid themselves of the influence, the name, the very thought of God. Whether it be communist nations or totalitarian nations or nations with such terrible disregard for the truth, but there have been many nations and are many nations where the God of the Bible is not known nor can be known publicly. But let me say that you can't get rid of God. You cannot get rid of God. Israel couldn't get rid of God. God has never let his people go in the past. He won't do it in the future. God followed them into their captivity in Babylon. When the prophets were silent, the temple was closed. God was still there, standing guard. When the kings of earth had their great feasts and forgot God, God remembered. You remember the time that with his very hand he wrote their doom, or he would move their work forward by his hand to bring glory. So we have this feast that's underway, this prince of the world, Ahasuerus, and it's a feast of a worldly prince. At the close of the book, we'll have a feast, and it's a feast of God's prince, Mordecai. Now, during this book, you'll see Haman exalted, but Mordecai will be exalted at last. As you read the story, you'll see the upsets in human history and the final triumph of God's chosen people. It's a beautiful story. You remember the stories of David and Joseph? God had each one hidden away for his own purpose. When the day came, he brought them to the front to work out his plan. When we think of Joseph, he was in a dungeon in Egypt. But when God had him ready, he then brought him out and made him prime minister of Egypt. God always has people in reserve to fulfill his purposes. It might be Joseph, it might be Moses, it might be Hannah, it might be Esther, it might be Mary. Think about the history that you know and how God has prepared people throughout history to use when they're needed. Esther stands out as God's chosen vessel. She's a sweet and winsome person. She's come to the kingdom for just such a time as this, as she mentions there in Esther 4:14. She takes her life in her own hands, and she goes in for her people's sake unto the king with the thought, if I perish, I perish. Two beautiful girls are remembered here in Scripture. One is Ruth, one is Esther. Ruth became the ancestress of the deliverer of Israel. Esther saves the people so that the deliverer might come. God has been carefully protecting Israel throughout the centuries for the purpose of blessing the whole world. God kept the nation of Israel according to his promise to Abraham. Well, the book of Esther is named for a Jewish orphan. And this Jewish orphan, Esther, became a queen of Persia. So the name Esther means, now guess this. Can you guess what it is? Esther means star. It means star of the east. Another way to outline the book is this. The Feast of the King in Esther's chapter 1 and 2. The Feast of Esther in chapter 7. And the Feast of Purim in chapter 9. And so here we are with the Feast of the King. This is a 180-day feast that he set up so that he and all of his advisors, all of his leaders, all of his governors, everybody was there. They were getting ready for the great battle that was yet to come. And we read again in verse 3, in the third year of his reign, he made a feast unto all his princes and his servants, the power of Persia and Media, the nobles and princes of the provinces being before him, when he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom and the honor of his excellent majesty many days, even 180 days, 180 days. When the days were expired, the king made a feast unto all the people that were present in Shushan, the palace, both unto great and small, 7 days in the court of the garden of the king's palace. Now think about it. He's had all the rulers there for 180 days of feasting and consideration of their coming battles. And then, when he's finished 180 days of that feast, he has another one. And this one, inviting the small and the great, the big and the little, the fancy and the simple. They were all invited for 7 days of feasting in the court of the garden of the king's palace, where there were white, green, and blue hangings, fastened with cords of fine linen and purple to silver rings and pillars of marble. The beds were of gold and silver upon a pavement of red and blue and white and black marble. Now think about that, the colors of the marble. Red, blue, white, and black. And they gave them drink in vessels of gold, the vessels being diverse from one from another. These vessels, these cups, these containers were all different. They were made individually. And royal wine in abundance according to the state of the king. The king was showing not only his satraps and all of those who were in his employ, but also the common folk. He was showing them his riches. He was a pompous kind of fellow. He was a hedonistic kind of fellow. He was one to be avoided unless you were invited to the feast and you had to go. And the drinking was according to the law. None did compel, for so the king had appointed to all the officers of his house that they should do according to every man's pleasure. So, he was saying, you do as you wish, as you're in my party. Enjoy the feast, enjoy the party, and have a good time. Verse 9, also Vashti the queen made a feast for the women in the royal house, which belonged to King Ahasuerus. On the 7th day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, and Abagtha, Zethar, and Carcas, the 7 chamberlains that served in the presence of Ahasuerus the king, to bring Vashti the queen before the king with the crown royal, to show the people and the princess her beauty, for she was fair to look on. Now, there's nothing wrong with a husband thinking his wife is beautiful. In fact, it's very good. It's commendable when the husband thinks highly of his wife. But that was not the case here. This was, again, the king wanting to show his wealth. He was using her as a thing, as property, as some sort of a chattel. She was not the queen, necessarily, in the eyes of this man, the king. She was something owned by him. And so he wanted her dressed up. He wanted her in the crown. He wanted her to be seen as being beautiful. But the queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment by his chamberlains. Therefore was the king very wroth. He was very angry. He was very nastily mad. And his anger burned in him. Then the king said to the wise men, which knew the times, for so was the king's manner toward all that knew law and judgment. And the next unto him was Karshina, Shethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, Marsina, and Memucan, the seven princes of Persia and Media, which saw the king's face, and which sat the first in the kingdom. What shall we do unto the queen Vashti according to law, because she hath not performed the commandment of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlains? Now, before we get to the answer, let me say that we must understand that this was not just a showing of the queen in her beauty. This was a sensual effort on the part of the king, and apparently she was to be, she would have been embarrassed by the situation, to say the least. She was not going to be treated with any royal treatment, that was for sure. Now, the historian Herodotus has confirmed what we've already said about this being the time that the plans were being put together for the military excursion. And this 7-day drinking feast was held with the separate feast for the women. So the men were in one place, the women in another. But here the drunken king summoned his queen, and many commentators would think that it was to make a lewd display and before his male guests. But she stood up for womanhood and refused. Now, according to Herodotus the historian, the queen's name was Amestrias, daughter of Otanes, and he had supported Darius in his bid for the throne much earlier. Possibly he had other queens whose names have not come to light, or she had alternative names, or there was a linguistic link between the names of Vashti and Amestris, but we don't know that. We don't know how many queens he had. We don't know any of that. The Oriental potentates were known for their harems. They were known for their numbers of wives and their concubines and all that went with that. They were not nice guys, and they certainly did not obey any of the restrictions that God would place upon humankind. So the king was upset. He turned to his wise men, and these wise men were part of the tradition of the Medes and the Persians. They were consulted, and they were looking at the stars. They were astrologers, and when it says they knew the times, it meant that they were up on their stars. And so don't think that these were wise in the sense of godly wisdom, not necessarily. But they did understand what they saw in the stars, and they would then relate that to the king. The king did not have to know how to read and write. The king did not have to know how to discern the times. The king did not know how to fight in war. The king didn't have to know anything as the king, because he had all of the wise men, all of the military rulers, everyone there to tell him what to do. Now, do you think that would be a good place for you to be a king or to be a queen and be told everything of what to do because you're such an airhead, you can't figure it out for yourself? I mean, I'm just asking. Would it be that be the case for you? Well, the king said to the wise men, what am I going to do? And it names off then these folks that were the seven princes of Media and Persia. And the phrase here, I think, is very interesting. It says, which saw the king's face and which sat the first in the kingdom. Not many people had personal audiences with the king. In fact, we'll see later on in this book of Esther how dangerous it was to try to have an audience with the king, especially if he didn't invite you. And so these were very important people because they sat in the place of authority next to the king.
Thank you for joining us today for this edition of the Bible Class with Dr. Kenneth C. Hill. You may reach us by email by going to our website, whcbradio.org, and sending us an email on the Contact Us link. That's whcbradio.org. If you prefer to use the postal service, our address is The Bible Class, WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Bluntville, Tennessee, 37617. That's The Bible Class, care of WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Bluntville, Tennessee, 37617. You may also call us at 423-878-6279. Until our next Bible Class program, we are trusting that the Lord will richly bless you as you serve Him.